The Breakfast Club.
Scott Gullen, good morning to you.
Good morning, Andrew. Great to be here.
Well, it's great to be in a different studio this morning. We're in studio two today.
I know. Normally, different view. I need to adjust.
My view's crap, actually, to be honest.
Oh, this is, I get another different crane to look at. So I'll let you know how that goes.
I can see the two pillars on the Balti Bridge.
Oh.
Which is different from normal.
Looks like it's going to be hot out there, which is very positive.
34, yes. Ooh.
I'm happy with that.
Nice warm day in Melbourne town.
Now, our former, I must mention off the top, our former host.
Oh, you're going straight there.
I'm going straight into it.
Straight there, right.
Daniel Harford.
Yes.
Had a non-winning horse, let's be honest. It's a horse that's been tipped a lot.
Mudlark.
He's been very vocal about it. And there was a lack of communication with the people around here yesterday.
No doubt there was.
When it was in an early race at Mornington. Mm. And Pat Carey, who we had on, he had the favourite in the race, which was scratched at the barrier.
This was race three yesterday.
Correct. Pat didn't tip that, but I got the mail after it that he'd maybe held back some little information.
Hard held.
And then, so it gets scratched. Daniel Stackhouse produces the best ride of his life. And Daniel Sons falls in by about a whisker. And congratulations to him. He was threatening legal action for my slur on it yesterday. So I apologise. It's a wonderful start for Daniel. All in my life, it's called.
All my life.
All my life. I didn't even know what it was called.
Let's have a listen to the race yesterday. I'm sure Half is actually paying me to play this off the top as he saluted as a winning owner.
All My Life has taken Seattle Dancer. Ain't She Cute down the middle of the track. It's All My Life at the 100 metres, followed by Ain't She Cute and Diamond Dagger's flashing home, but All My Life will last. All My Life has just won from Diamond Dagger and Ain't She Cute in a photo for second.
Lucky the post came quickly as well. It was
at least he gets Matt Hill calling it. So, well done. I said I would lead with it for him. We still remember him, even though he's not here for a couple of days.
Yes.
Well done, Danielson.
Saw him doing some good work at Carlton Women's Training, though.
Oh, he's got the lycra back on, has he?
No, don't know. I just saw him trotting in the background of some of the vision
back
coming
into
out
it.
Of Princess Park. But, congratulations.
Congratulations. Now, I got a text message from you, as we prepare for our show. We do a lot of interaction. Not really, but State of Origin.
Yes.
Great game.
Was a fantastic.
Like, we wanted the biff, but we didn't even need the biff.
No, we didn't in the end. It was brilliant. It was funny. I was talking to a few friends last night during the game. We were just saying the first two State of Origins looked like they'd played for a year. It wasn't quite that high intensity.
The energy wasn't there, was it?
No.
Adelaide was a bit weird and the ground, everything was a bit off.
There weren't those huge hits. And
Queensland won, and everyone's like, oh, hang on, what's going on? The second one was just New South Wales being New South Wales in Sydney.
Yep.
But, this was 49,000 energy.
Mm.
And then two, naturally, of the Storm boys just said, we'll put on a show.
Oh, my goodness.
How's C. Munster going?
Well, how's H. Grant going?
Oh, no.
Harry Grant, we just found one.
If Cameron Smith was wavering about coming back to the Storm, I think he was in the commentary box, I think he would have said, I don't think if I'm playing, I won't be playing down there again.
In case you're just waking up and you went to bed early last night, 20 points to 14, the Maroons last night over the Blues in State of Origin 3. So they take home their first series.
Over the Outsiders again, $3.20 or something.
Yep, haven't won since 2017. Nice. Yeah, I reckon if you backed Queensland every game for the last 10 years, you'd be going okay. I know they had a super team for a while, but in the last 5 years, they've had a lot of those players transition out of the team, but they've still won, what's that, three of the last five series.
It just adds to the legend of Wayne Bennett, who, I mean, down here, we don't see him that. I've always seen him as being grumpy and not answering questions and being just a general narc.
Mm.
We know his record, but then you see him, I don't know whether it's his guard down, but with his players after it, like guys who are in civilian clothes on the bench, it's like, oh, there's something about him that the players embrace that we don't see.
I think it'd be great to get an insight, actually. I mean, Cameron Smith's released his book, and he
There's a few nuggets getting thrown around there.
There has been. So we've heard about the book all week, but if we do get to speak to Cameron Smith in the next week, or even if it's half a mighty, I would love to explore the outside version of Wayne Bennett, and then also what... I don't think... Was Cameron Smith ever coached by him? I wonder in his junior career whether he was guided or mentored or anything. But even talking to Cameron Munster, who's now experienced life under Wayne Bennett at a representative level, it'd be fantastic to get an insight as to what he's actually like. I have heard him talk about Bennett a little bit over the last couple of weeks, and Cam Munster said he's been surprised. He's the coach who sits up the back in the naughty row on the bus. He's just one of the lads. And he doesn't strike you as that, does he?
No, not at all.
He strikes you as a standoffish, intimidating coach who you wouldn't have that bond with. But he has, one thing he does have is an incredible bond with his players.
Well, I think he blooded, 14 new players over the three games. Yeah. Like, he just flipped it on its head. But Munster, when you watch a game, it's like, in a bit, it was like watching Gary Ablett in his prime when he'd just get the ball, want the ball all the time. A bit like Dusty Martin has a bit of that at times.
Yep.
It was like, because in rugby league, when I watch, sometimes blokes just, you don't see him for a while. He was, I want the ball, and he got in position to get it all the time. And then that kick across goal, which ended up with the try, that was just, he noticed there was no one there, and it was a domination. And then, you mentioned our new man, H. Grant, came on 25 minutes in.
Boy, changed the game.
Wowee.
Yeah, I mean, I must
admit, it was a really good game.
I didn't watch a hell of a lot of Harry Grant this year at West Tigers. But my goodness me.
Dan Swanson Shredder wouldn't know who Harry Grant is.
If he plays the way he did last night for the next 10 years for the Melbourne Storm, we won't be seeing Cameron
Smith. And Pappenhausen.
Yes.
And Munster. Oh. I know we're probably going to lose the coach after next year, and we've lost the other legend. So they're still going to be pretty handy.
Oh, yeah. But that's what they've always done, the Melbourne Storm. Their forward pack, they've often got people from...
they just resurrect.
Rejects,
discarded, troubled types.
You tell them that.
You know what I mean? Who might have lost their way.
Yeah,
they come down here and it's like, boys, this is how we roll here.
Yep. Even I loved, speaking of Frank Panisi from the Melbourne Storm yesterday, even the way he was talking about Brandon Smith, who gave that very colourful interview after he won the premiership. Looked like he was with the lads at the local third grade.
The Munster was in that territory last night. If you didn't pick it up, he's going to Byron Bay to get on it. That's what he kept saying, man. 20 times. Byron Bay. Yeah, okay. No. We get the picture. You're going to Byron Bay, Cameron.
There'd be some very nervous schooners in Byron Bay over the next few weeks.
The security at the beach hotel will be going, oh, how are we going to handle these boys?
He's pretty good on the beers too, as we saw from the Melbourne Storm.
Well, his personality sober would suggest he's halfway there.
Well, he's been off it, and he actually said that. Bellamy said, get off the beers. Real opposite to Dan Andrews. So that has worked, but now he can go full Dan Andrews and get on the beers for the next couple of weeks. Well-deserved, Cameron Munster, well-deserved Maroons last night. I thought it was a fantastic game.
I will say, injury, if Tedesco doesn't get knocked out... It's. I'm not saying they win, but it was a game changer.
Yep, absolutely.
It was a game changer.
Now, the thing, you know what I am amazed by Cameron Munster, is that he is one of the strongest humans I've seen.
Yeah.
The way he fends people off, like he'll have 120-kilo blokes trying to tackle him, and he just does the palm off. He'd be good, him and Dusty, fend off.
It's good. I know we had the discussion about did it work. I think it worked compared to the middle of the year. And it will go back to middle of the year, but there is a gap in play, as we've said, in sport, and this definitely filled it.
Well, it's interesting, I having this discussion last week, I think, when there wasn't as much on TV, and I think it's probably actually worked for... We wouldn't have talked about rugby union if it was in the middle of the year, those tests, and we wouldn't have talked as much, I don't think, about Origin, but because they have been standalone events, it's been big. What about... So we were scheduled this week, I think it was, to have the first test against Afghanistan over in Perth. So that was the original cricket schedule.
That would have got a lot of love.
What about, now I know this raises alarms with everyone, the Spring Carnival moving.
I sort of, when Crawford were the ones who were on the front foot saying we want to go to the end of November, which is around here, obviously. I'm against that. I mean, the Caulfield Cup, it's there for a reason for the Melbourne Cup, which is the bigger race. It's in the program. Everyone understands it. They're just unlucky. I mean, COVID got them. I get that. But next year, COVID's not going to be here, touch wood. They're going to get 56, whatever thousand people they get in there. Yeah, trying to fill a gap in play, nah. I think you just make good with what you've done traditionally, and you're very good at it. You get people there.
The other thing to think about, too, is you're always going to have the test summer starting around this time,
you're gonna
which
have
is obviously different this year.
And AFL trade and draft, like, that's pretty big. That dominates. You're not going to get free air.
But that's always going to be in October. So do you want to go up against the AFL trade period, or do you want to go up against the first test or second test?
Oh, yeah. Look, you make good points about keeping it rolling. But I'm a traditionalist on this one.
Yeah, no, I don't really have a firm opinion either way. I can see the benefits of both.
I don't think it worked when it's stayed in where it's been.
No, and the Caulfield Cup this year was fantastic.
But, yeah, this was the year to tinker, and clearly they wouldn't, so they're not going to tinker again.
Yeah. It'll come up again next year.
Oh, I'll keep rolling with it. It'll absolutely.
But it's a discussion that should be had. So I'm glad this is what's the beauty of sport.
It's the discussion.
People get involved, engaged. I think it's actually great for racing to have these debates.
No, it makes them relevant. I've got no problem with that.
Yep.
No, at all.
100% agree. NRL stop-start reviews and challenges are super boring and over the top. Even the winning moment was reviewed from Jezza.
Yeah, the Queensland players didn't seem too interested in that late review.
But no, let's have a listen to how it played out.
Here is Paulo. Lost the ball. He's lost the ball, and the Maroons run it dead. Jake French throws it into the crowd up at the northern end.
New South Wales are challenging.
We've got a challenge
the ruling
here.
Of Queensland taking
Queensland
the ball.
Queensland are celebrating, but New South Wales have got a challenge on the lost ball.
Yeah, you can challenge. You've got 10 seconds. Time's expired, but you still got the challenge.
What appears to be the end of the game. We're trying to work out whether or not the ball is touched by Harry Grant. It's not. It's picked up by Friend.
Jake Friend knocks the ball on into the head of New South Wales.
Game over.
Challenge is successful.
Game over. Queensland wins.
Jake Friend knocks it on.
Challenge successful.
And that kills the play. Lock on, Jake.
That's it, though.
There he is. He's blown time. After all of that, a giant punctuation mark. Origin is done and dusted.
That is a real stinker. When it finishes like that, it's just the air out of the balloon.
Yeah, but like I said, I don't think the Queensland players weren't paying any attention.
No.
And either were the crowd. They were all going berserk. So, and did you hear Ray Warren, first time, they did very well, Channel 9. You didn't know he wasn't there.
No.
First time in his whole career he's done it off a TV because coronavirus, they couldn't get in there. Him and Phil Gould weren't there. Fatty was.
Wouldn't surprise me if Phil Gould's bad for Queensland for the next
actually,
10
Actually, I know
years.
He got benched for game two, but I thought he was good last night.
Did you hear Josh Adokar's the fastest man on the planet?
Yeah, no, that was right. He kept saying it. He repeating. He's the fastest man. He's the fastest man on the planet.
He repeats a lot of what he
says. He's a star. He said that about five times. We're like, yep, got it, Phil. Anyway, I thought it was very well done. That Rabbits Warren for 50-odd years or 20 years or something extraordinary.
Very good job.
He'd never done it off the TV.
No, he's a star. He's the voice. There's not many. Oh, I mean, you think of footy and there's a number of voices, but he is the voice of rugby league.
Without a doubt.
Yep.
That us non-league people just relate to.
Yep, absolutely. Phil the Goose was terrible again, such a biased commentator. So there's not a lot of positive feedback off the SMS for Phil.
Yeah, I wasn't at Storm levels when he's barracking for the grand final for the opposition.
No.
Because he was a player, manager and former everything at that club. It was pretty obvious.
I've got a few questions for you, Scott, this morning.
Hang on.
I did notice some infiltration into your article into the score this morning. There's a different name there.
No, well, yeah, no, I'm a
Now, I know when
I'm
you're on holidays, it's the water cooler who writes
we don't let the water cooler.
The water cooler writes the column.
No,
that's
we're
who the photo is.
Caring, sharing.
Glenn McFarlane,
workplace.
One of our friends here at RSN, exactly. is suddenly contributing. What's going on? Is there a takeover plot or something?
No, well, it's not beyond me to totally lift stuff and not attribute it. But I like to look after my boys. They've done the hard work. So Macca got a little tagline, which he'll cut that out and put on the fridge. He'll be pretty happy with that.
He will be.
No, if they do their work, they get...
Okay.
I mean, they want to get in that space because otherwise they don't get read.
This
so
is
there's
a
lot
is
of people...
publication within a publication. You've got a team now.
Yeah, I've got a team. Oh, absolutely. The Score has got a following and a cult sort of... little workers for me, and Macca was worker bee for me yesterday.
Now, speaking of Macca, he was one of the pioneers behind the Herald Sun's very highly successful Sacked.
Oh, podcast. Yes. He's front and square on that.
And I've enjoyed all three series of that. Now, we are. I was flicking through the shiny pages, the confidential pages today.
Yeah, no, they've jumped on board.
They have jumped on board. They've copied the sack, and now we've got a Sacked Showbiz podcast
it's
coming.
It's becoming bigger than Texas. No,
I hope Mac is getting an earn out of this.
Macca and Ralphie started it. And you know, Showbiz, they've found a few. Steve Bedwell.
Or there'd be a few in Showbiz.
They've been able to find a few over there.
It'd be 400 series.
Yeah. So, no, it's a good little, podcasts are the way of the future, as we all know that. So you can tune in. They've jumped on board. And like you said, plenty of people to find who got sacked in showbiz world.
Plenty. And plenty on the chopping block as well.
Correct.
Maybe Eddie will do a...
Oh.
Not that he was sacked, but...
Well, apparently not.
No,
he just slept in one day and decided, oh, I'm in trouble.
That's it.
Because I slept past my alarm.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
bodies.
There'd be some very interesting stories in that, that's for sure.
Oh, Eddie's very would go for stories. Months.
Let us know who you'd like to... it was always interesting on open mic that ones that hadn't been done. I mean, he had a good run at the end, but a few that had been missed along the way.
The one that annoyed him was Wayne Carey.
Yeah.
Who texted, I'll do it, and then communication went...
Yeah.
Breakdown.
Let us know off the SMS. Who's the one interview, sort of tell-all, that you'd like to see from the sporting world that we've never really had? 0416 90 50 52.
I think Mike wanted, the obvious, Gary Ablett Sr. and Carey.
Yeah, Sr. and Carey are the two.
They're the two in football that you'd think. I think David Warner's in years to come would be a very good interview.
Yeah.
Because he's holding back.
Mm-hmm.
Probably till he writes a book, which will be... on for young and old then.
Be a good book.
Oh, it'd be a ripper. His version of events.
Yeah.
Who else? What other sports stars that...
Well, I was thinking about this yesterday. There's been a lot of tell-alls over the... It's sort of become in vogue. I think even since the documentaries have taken off over the last couple of years on Netflix, the tell-all insight has become... the new thing. But I think what catapulted it was Lance.
Yeah.
When he opened up, I think that was one of the ones that
And Michael Jordan, obviously, too. I mean, if you did a Tiger Woods like Michael Jordan, that would be
awesome.
And he talked about everything. Again, it has to be about everything.
Yeah.
So if he went over the whole box and dice, Tiger Woods would be fascinating.
That would be awesome. A couple of the SMS very quickly. Bomber Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he's done a book, but there might be chapters.
But he didn't go over a key area. He did recently in the Herald Sun with Michael Warner. He touched. But if you put it all together, it'd be quite fascinating.
That'd be good. Tony Lockett, another one off the SMS.
Yeah, the big fella. He loves the media more now than he ever did.
Yeah.
He answers the phone now to journos. It's extraordinary.
Does he?
No, I'd be too scared to ring still.
Yes. No doubt. Hey, speaking of St Kilda, and that's quite a good segue to
That's
the front
I'm
page
here.
Today.
I'm the Segway King.
I know. You'll be on. What was the Segway King? Today Tonight used to be the most unbelievable Segway show of all
the
time.
The obvious Segway.
Oh, they could link any two stories in the world. I don't know how. Danny Nicklick's another one that has come.
Oh, yeah.
Years.
Oh,
that would be a good one.
There's a few in the racing industry we could start to reel off.
Absolutely. Speaking of St Kilda, though, great to see Danny Frawley's legacy to live on at Moorabbin with a new I think it's $16 million mental health facility for health and well-being called the Danny Frawley Centre to be established at the Moorabbin headquarters of the Saints. So a wonderful initiative. One thing I think that footy clubs are doing especially well over the last couple of years is building facilities for the community more than themselves. Obviously, a lot of the... I don't know too much about overseas facilities, but when
there's a grey line, a lot of it's to get funding.
No doubt about that.
Like the hangar at Essendon what did they have? Like the Shot Putters Association or something?
Did they?
No, it wasn't that bad, but it was a very vague little...
Yeah, okay.
They had one little room with a door and you get $10 million from the government.
I get a lot of it is for funding.
But it's getting better. I think that was back in the... You know, a decade ago where you could sort of rot the system.
Yes. Well, I think if you look at the facilities overseas, especially of all the private Premier League clubs that are privately owned, they're just sort of training facilities in the middle of nowhere for the elite of the elite, and it doesn't really benefit the community.
Don't forget when Eddie took over Olympic Park, that was supposed to be a public precinct.
Yes.
He often has fences up and people aren't allowed anywhere near it.
Yes, yes.
The athletics community, don't forget that.
Yes. Don't have coffee and try and spy on training either in the little cafe there either. You might get some strong feedback from some insiders at the
point. But no, this is excellent. Because Moorabbin's getting redone. You know, Saints have made it its home. And to have something like this where people can go to seek help and understanding, it's perfect.
Ah, it's fantastic. It's a really nice thing that has obviously been in the works for a while, but announced today, front page of the Herald Sun. We're just going to hold our fire on the rules, Scotty.
Ooh.
We're just going to hold our
fire. Warming up.
About 10 to 8. We're going to...
In a shock, Kevin Bartlett's commented, but we'll get to that.
Three rule changes for the season next year, which are going to be...
I'm a bit confused by one of them.
Which one? Man on the mark?
Yeah, I'm not sure what that's going to achieve.
No,
the kicking man on the mark.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
An extra 5 minutes. We'll go into detail.
There's some...
If you've got Gary Rowan on the mark, he's still going to get to you.
Yes. No, there's some strange... I think they're minor tweaks, so I don't actually think that we're going
to
see
a huge difference. The man on the mark... Sorry, we're getting too deep into it. The man on the mark can't be replaced. That's clever. That will be... That's a good one.
Interesting times ahead as well in the NBA today with the draft taking place. There's a couple of good little Australian stories that we're very keen to find a little bit more about. And Liam Santamaria joins us, NBL analyst and commentator, to explore a few of those. Liam, good morning. Welcome to RSN.
Thanks. Good morning.
Now, tell us about Josh Green. We were talking about him a little earlier in the week, looking ahead to this Thursday morning. And obviously, we do hear of a lot of players making the switch from basketball as a junior or having a basketball background in the footy world. Now we're switching from the footy world, from a possible career with the GWS Giants, to a career in the NBA. Tell us more about this young man.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Obviously, Sydney-born. He's got an American dad, an Australian mum. And, as you say, grew up playing Aussie rules and then realised he was red-hot at basketball. So made his way over to the States with his family as a young teen, about 13, 14, played some high school ball over there in Arizona and really impressed. And then 1 year with the University of Arizona Wildcats, and he's set to get picked up in the first round today. So somewhere around the late teens, early 20s for Josh Green is the expectation, and we're going to have another Aussie ready to begin his NBA journey.
198 centimetres, he's the perfect size.
He is, and he's a great athlete. Big, strong kid, tremendous athleticism, very quick, excellent in the open floor. He hangs his hat on his defense. Really, really good defender, and teams have been really, excited about what he can bring for them as a guy who can come out and guard premier players on the wing. So that's really exciting. His shot is developing. He has potential to become what we term in basketball circles a 3-and-D wing, a guy who can hit threes and play defense, and those guys are really valuable in the modern game. So exciting for his NBA journey to begin today.
And we love our mock drafts, Liam. And there's talk Utah, 23rd pick, Joe Ingles, could happen.
Well, that was one of the hopes, actually. But that's just how quickly things move in the NBA, especially on draft day. overnight, the Jazz actually traded that pick.
Oh, there
so they,
you go.
They traded that to the New York Knicks. So they traded down the draft board. The Knicks took hold of that 23rd pick, which is intriguing. So the Knicks now pick at number 8 and number 23, and there's some suspicion that maybe they're doing that in order to put together a package to trade up the draft to obtain LaMelo Ball. So well, lots of moving pieces in play.
I was going to mention him because he's now Australian.
Yeah.
You know we've claimed
him. He's our very own.
Yeah.
What's your belief? Do you think he's one or is he more top 3-5?
That's a great question. It could go either way, which is funny to say on the morning of the draft. Usually we know 100% who the number one pick's going to be, but Minnesota's been playing funny buggers with the number one pick in terms of keeping it very quiet who they want to take. And he's certainly been the projected number one pick for most of the year, but there has been some movement in those projections over the last week or so. So certainly I think somewhere in the top 4 could potentially slip down to Chicago at 4. That he would be a nice fit there, but we're all hoping he goes number one because that would be a tremendous story for him and certainly for the NBL because he came out here, did his thing, and that'll really help put our league on the map.
No doubt, if it hasn't already. In terms of the Next Gen program in the NBL, we also saw RJ Hampton. Where's he expected to lob in terms of the draft order?
He's expected to go somewhere in the teens. Maybe the late lottery, 13, 14, or maybe just after the lottery, around 15, 16. Maybe his floor is probably 19 to Brooklyn, most suspect, which is pretty exciting. I mean, he's certainly really impressed in the pre-draft process. And, you know, teams know that he didn't put up massive numbers for the New Zealand Breakers last year, but this is a tough league, and he was on a good team with good players. So they needed to look beyond those numbers to see what he's going to be able to bring. And look, if he slips beyond that 14, 15, 16 mark, I think teams are sleeping on him a little bit because I'm high on what he can do as an NBA player. And you're right, he's another guy that came into the NBL and really impressed.
And there's some NBL players like Sam Frohling and that who could go in later rounds potentially, do you think?
Yeah, they'll all have their fingers crossed. Frohling from Illawarra, Quatnoy from Cairns. One guy who's a reasonable chance of getting picked up is Justinian Jessup, an American guy, but signed with the Hawks recently as a next star. So there's a chance he could get picked up maybe late in the second round. Also, Perth Wildcats new import, John Mooney, he'll be hoping to hear his name called as well. So for the first time in a long time, I think there's lots of interest for Australian basketball fans from pick 1 right through to pick 60 today.
Duke, good morning. Welcome back to the Breakfast Club.
Morning, Maisie. Morning, Scotty. Morning, listeners. I'm pumped to be back. It's been a while.
It has been a while. I'm sure it's been a long year in your life, John. Not a great time to open a gym and a cafe in the last couple of years.
No, we just wanted to make sure we were very resilient in our business structure to try and get through a pandemic, Maisie. So,
how has it been?
Yeah, it's been tough. You know, I probably actually didn't realise how tough it's actually been until I was driving to the gym at 4:30 a.m. on last Monday morning, and I sort of had this massive smile on my face and I was ready to go, and it just felt like the weight of the world was lifted off my shoulders. So, mate, it was a really, really tough period. Obviously, we only started strong down in Mornington on January 18. So, you know, we had that 8-week run at it, got locked down, then we had 15 days back open, and then we went into, obviously, you know, lockdown 2.0. So, geez, it's been hard, but everyone's in the same boat, and we got through okay, and the classes have been all right this week and last.
Now, I think the equipment at your place is worth a lot, which is part of the feature of Strong.
It's the selling point.
Now, we know at footy clubs, Haysto, everyone just raided the gym as lockdown was announced. You couldn't sneak one of the machines home, could you, in the ute or whatever? It'd be a big machine to sort of smuggle home for 6 months and work out at home.
Maisie, you're right. It's they weigh about 300 kilos, these things. They came in a 40-foot container, and we sort of scratched our heads and thought, how are we going to get these out? But we had to get about 7 or 8 blokes to help us lift them out. So Yeah, look, I know other places were hiring out equipment and all that sort of stuff, but because of how unique we actually are, it's a Pilates bed with a rower inbuilt into the actual bed. So it's, geez, it's hard to...
I'm already confused.
Yeah, Scotty, you'd be good on it, actually. I reckon you'd just come down and smash it.
I appreciate
it.
That. Duke,
but you've been
see
down
something.
At Barwon Heads and just been in the gym anyway, haven't you?
No, I've just been playing golf and walking around the beach. Life's good down there, Duke.
Oh,
very
geez,
happy.
I'll
tell
you
in what. My cafes, I've been doing. How's Frankie, the cafe, my favourite cafe that's in more newspapers and TV reports than any other cafe?
Good publicity machine there.
Yeah, no, we're going all right. It's we've just ticked along with takeaway, but now we've got a few seats back. We're hoping to get a few more back on the weekend, but the council have been great. They've allowed us to shut off a few car parking spaces down there in Norman Avenue, and we're going to have a bit of a festival summer, if you like. I reckon it's going to be pretty special. It's a bit of live music. I think Tones and I is around the corner, so
hello.
Hopefully we can get her across the line.
I sense, Duke, that you've gravitated away from the kitchen to the gym. I sense there's been a bit of a shift since we last had you.
Well, you see, I work with my wife when I'm at the cafe, and it's hospitality is a tough enough thing as it is, Scotty. So, you know, if I misplace a spoon or I don't put sugar in someone's coffee, it is World War III. So I've been able to navigate my way out of that and into the gym, which has been bloody good.
Now, what about your former profession, that part-time gig as a cricketer? Have you picked up a ball? Have you done anything? Are you going to do anything? What's happening?
Yeah, I'm actually, I've got a full book this year. I'm coaching, helping out with, I'm helping out with Mount Eliza, some of their juniors and a couple of their key senior players on a Monday night, which has been awesome. And I'm bowling coach at Frankston as well. So between that, in the gym, and I'm also going to play at Q with some really good mates. We've got a very good team assembled, but on the weekend we had a practice game. We lost about 18 wickets for about 60 runs. So
boys were a bit rusty.
Yeah, we were a bit rusty. We got Matty Brown, who was captain of Melbourne first last year. We got Willie Sheridan, who played for the Renegades, of course. Chris Weeks was captain coach, and he played in the first grade premiership for Richmond. Chalkley, Wildsmith, you name it. So hopefully we'll have a bit of fun.
A bit of fun. You should be demolishing everyone. It's a fair
not
lineup.
From the weekend's results. We were very, very poor. But it, the thing we wanted to do, we've always said, you know, after we finish up, and I had a couple of years setting up some businesses, and it's just going to be really good to get back. There's some good young kids actually down at Q. I'm really looking forward to the season and getting back around cricket clubs. It's been brilliant. Just I rolled the arm over the other day and the shoulder nearly snapped off, but I don't think I'll be bowling, that's for sure.
When are you kicking off officially?
This weekend. Plenty Valley this weekend at home at Kew. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. All the wicket tables that I've seen around the place look exceptional as well, because there's no footy being on. So
plenty of time to mow the grass.
Exactly.
Little Kerrimuir Park there, it is. It's like carpet.
That's ridiculous.
The middle wicket, sort of... I was going for a walk down there the other day, and the one of the volunteers put in the stakes up. That's always, you know, around the centre wicket area. Oh, geez, it's a good feeling, isn't it?
Yeah.
You just know it's around the corner. It is going to be fantastic. So good luck to all the local cricketers. If you haven't started already, good luck this weekend. It's so good to see it back. Hey, Duke, the man on everyone's lips has been Will Pekoski this summer. It has been extraordinary what he's been able to produce in the first couple of games. You obviously experienced a bit of time with him at the Vicks as he was coming through as a youngster. Over the last couple of days, Scotty and I are becoming very concerned.
Angry.
A lot of the talk is about leaving Joe Burns in the lineup and then... if there needs to be a change made...
Because of chemistry, Duke. Chemistry. Mm.
Now, in all seriousness, how important is that in a cricket team? And would you be playing Pekoski on form or would you be playing Burns on continuity?
Well, I think... I think there's a spot for both. I honestly believe that chemistry is very important in any team environment. But when you're an opening batter, they see things differently. It's, you know, they're going out there and facing blokes that bowl 145 kilometres, 150 sometimes an hour, and they've got to get through and do the team job. So openers probably more so than any other combination in cricket do have that chemistry. And I think Burns and Warner have that. They're good mates off the field. They get along well. They complement each other's games out there. But, you know, you look back in history, you had obviously had Hayden and Langer. They were exceptional mates and had a really good, formidable partnership at the top of the order. You know, Taylor, Slater, these guys. And it goes back throughout history. And you look at the Vic side when we were really strong. You know, Chris Rogers and Nick Jewell had a seriously good relationship as well. It was different at times, but, you know, they got along well and they do a really good job. So for me, I think, you know, Pekowski still plays. I think as a young kid coming into a side, if you've looked, I think, you know, Ponting started down at six, Michael Clark started down at six. It's not a soft seat option. It's just a way of getting them in to the side. And, you know, Pekowski, I've spoken about it at length before. He's a once-in-a-generational cricketer. And you can only see what he's done this year. I think he would have played last year had all the off-field issues that he had with his concussions and how he was feeling away from the game. I think he would have played last year. So, you know, for me, he has to slot in, whether it's five, I mean, or whether it's six.
Who misses Duke? Head.
Well, that's Head or Wade.
Head or Wade?
Yeah. That's the decision for me you have to make. And those guys have done really well over the last few years, but I really want to see him in the lineup. Obviously, he's been opening the batting for Victoria.
Well, Chris Rogers previous year identified, and he admitted that, the coach. The new coach said, mate, I think your best bet is to get in via the opening. And I'm just concerned because, you know, they're very loyal, Langer and these types. But you tell everyone, go and make runs, Sheffield Shield. This is the way to get in, you know, blah, blah, blah. The kid makes 500 or something in five innings. Burns, I agree, has done his role, but he makes 50 in five innings. I don't think you can justify it if it comes down to him and Burns.
Yeah, that's the argument, isn't it? It's you go away and you tell these guys, go and make runs. Pekowski was making them from day one.
Yeah, anyway, but he had his issues, yeah.
Yeah, he had some issues off the field, so he has to play. Where it is, I'm not really too concerned because he's pretty versatile in a sense of where he can structure up and how he goes about his game. But, you know, if it's a top of the order, obviously he's got two double hundreds to start. So what do you do with that? He has to play. There's going to be someone that's unlucky, but he's got to play.
I'm fearful they'll do the selectors, you know, oh, we'll just see, give Head or Wade or Burns one test.
Yep.
You know, why? Oh, I'll just see one test. And then, you know, poor Will might go off the ball. Not off the ball, but you know what I mean? One test to see how they go.
Yeah.
What if they all play well? Oh, we'll give them another test.
That's the risk they take. I think you've got to get him. I think if he's mentally right to go, which clearly he is.
Clearly
he's... You've got to play him. You've got to play him test one.
No,
so
I'm in agreement with that. Yeah, he's got to slot in somewhere. If it's Joe Burns that gets the axe, it doesn't sound like it's going to be him. There's been a big push from the top to say that synergy and that connection is good enough for them to be able to stick with him. So for me, it's going to be one of the very, very unlucky guys in Matty Wade or Travis Head.
So, well, Head's made 100, hasn't he? They all made 100s, it seemed, a couple of weeks ago.
Yep. Wade had a couple of good performances when Tasmania didn't score many runs. He dug in a little bit, so... It's a tough one because and this was another question I was going to ask of you, Duke, because we've seen they've been roads really over there in Adelaide. So is that almost an added? I think it's been good to get a form read on everyone because often that's one of the most difficult processes because we go, oh, Pekowski's made two centuries, but he might have been batting on a road at the MCG and they may have been facing the swinging ball down in Tasmania and Matthew Wade's made a really gutsy 40 when no one else got into double figures. I think it's actually been easier to compare them, but they all have been on roads. So is that something that selectors take into account too? Because there's not exposed form on different types of tracks, which hopefully we'll get, as we do, you know, each and every summer, with a little bit of variance between all of the pitches around Australia.
Well, it's like trying to find a winner at Maui today when you're lining up soft and heavy and, you know, good threes and good fours. But you're right, they've been on a very level playing field, so they can't give it the old one, oh, well, he plays at the MCG every week, it's flat, and it's been flat for the last 10 years. So you're right, everyone's on a level playing field. You've still got to go out and get those runs. But if everyone's on a level playing field, there's one guy that's absolutely blown the roof off the competition.
Yeah.
And there's a couple that probably have been subpar. So what does it say about that? You can go the other way and go, well, look, it is flat, but they haven't scored as many runs as we would have liked leading into the Test Series. So they've got some decisions at hand. But I think, and I've always said this, if you've got a very strong Test team, it lets the guys that are younger do their apprenticeship. And I think that's what's happened. You've seen Cameron Green come through. He's got a game because other guys have been away on Aussie duties. If the top team's really solid in any comp, doesn't matter whether it's Mount Eliza Cricket Club or Q Cricket Club, if the ones are solid, then the rest of the club gets to learn off them and gets to do their time in the earlier grades and work their way up.
Now, you mentioned Cam Green. I feel bad. Adam White should probably ring in to ask this question. But he's in the squad. He's obviously not going to get a game straight away, but would you like to see in this three test, and where would he fit? Again, is it the head Wade situation?
Well, this is another one because they tell me he's a better bowler than he is a batter, and that to me is just scary. You know, the kid's an absolute freak, and he's been a product of the WA being so strong over a number of years and learning off the top guys as well. But you know, what he's been able to do when he's come in is pretty special. If his back holds up, you know, he could be that all rounder that we've been missing since Shane Watson. So. I think that I just think it's a great inclusion into the squad. He'll learn off guys like Hazelwood, Paddy Cummins with the ball, but also you've got Steve Smith, Warner, Labuschagne that he can learn off with the bat. So it's going to be a really good exposure for him to get in there. He's probably a little while off yet. I'd love to see him get a full season under his belt with the ball, but if he's good enough to keep scoring hundreds, 150s, they're big hundreds. They're not just limping over the line, and they're normally when his team's in trouble as well. So they're really good signs for a young cricketer. I think he's a star of the future. Whether he's ready this summer, maybe not, but I want to see him as an all-rounder coming into the team.
We're going to ask Stuart Fox in about 10 or 15 minutes about whether the MCG might end up with two tests, but I've got a question for both of you and a question for the listeners as well. If the MCG does end up with the two tests, which you probably could have got a million to one 3 months ago, hosting two tests in this Australian summer... If the MCG did get two tests and they move the Adelaide one, which would be a day-night fixture, and you had one ticket and you could go to either the first ever day-night test match at the MCG before Christmas or after Christmas, the traditional Boxing Day test, which would you go to?
Well, Virat's playing the first one and not the second one, well, so I'm going to the first one.
That's what you've got to throw into the equation. Do you want to go see King Kohli bat or do you want to go to the traditional Boxing Day test when everyone's got time off?
I want us to go see the king.
But we need to ask Foxy how many that they're actually going to be, or it looks likely to be at the MCG as well. So for me, it would be Boxing Day. I absolutely love the Boxing Day test.
Really?
As long as I can get myself out of the bull ring, it'll be fine.
Give Kohli the miss this Australian summer.
Well, the thing is, Maisie, I'm scarred by bowling to him over so many years, so I don't really need to see him play that much anymore, I think. The amount of times he's hit me back over my head for six, I probably can just pass on seeing him play again.
Did he ever... I know he likes to chat on the field. Did he ever give you some advice when he was whacking you over the fence?
Nah, I never had too many heated moments with Kohli, actually. There was a program back in the day when we went through the Cricket Academy that a few of the young Indian kids would come over, and he was one of those. So I remember playing against him when we were, you know, sort of... I would have been 19. He would have been 15 or 16, I think, coming in. Where were we? Bangalore. We had an academy tour over there, and he came in and just lit it up with Robin Utapar, who plays for Calcutta.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I remember playing him back then. So that's the thing. When you play against everyone in underage, you sort of lose that bit of sting in the game later on, unfortunately.
Speaking of a complicated situation, the CEO of the Melbourne Cricket Club, Stuart Fox, has had that in 2020, and it continues. We thought we were probably through the last-minute planning, but there could be some more to come. He joins us on the line on this Thursday morning. Stuart, good morning and welcome to RSN.
Yeah, good morning, guys. How are you?
We're well. How are you? Has there been any adjustments or contingency plans that continue to be put in place now that we were probably a million to one to have two tests a couple of months ago, but now there's just a slight chance that that might actually be the case?
Yeah, there is a slight chance, but, you know, I said yesterday I'd hate to see the test leave South Australia. It's such an iconic test, and, you know, we've lived through the loss of the AFL Grand Final this year, and it was extremely unpleasant. So I do wish Adelaide all the best, and I hope it goes ahead over there. But, look, if it needed to be rescheduled into Victoria, we could host it and we'd be ready.
So, Foxy, as we sit here and we're on a string of donuts and touch wood, it continues. In, what is it, 5 weeks, if it's the Boxing Day is the first test, how many could we get into the fans?
For me to answer, because I won't determine it ultimately. We won't determine it. It'll be the government, the DHHS, who'll determine that. But at the moment, we've been given a guide of 25,000 each day into the test. I think that may change a little bit. I don't think it'll change drastically, but look, I'd expect anywhere between 25 and 35,000 each day. So, look, it's a good start. We'd love a full house. It's certainly going to be very, very different. But I'm just thrilled. We haven't had anything really significant with crowds since that Women's T20 World Cup event on March the 8th. So it's been 10 months.
Foxy, you haven't even had a trial the new lights out yet either, have you? You haven't even...
No, there's been no things we haven't done. We've got beautiful new lights. We've got a brand new Australian Sports Museum that was the $17 million refresh that opened and then closed the next week. You wouldn't believe the G and the state of it. We actually had to basically put it in hibernation, and she's a pretty dusty and dirty place at the moment, but we've started the clean and getting it ready. So, yeah, it's a huge task, but we're just wrapped that we're starting to think about a return.
Are there any concerns from Matty Page, the curator, that he wouldn't have had any cricket on the G? I mean, obviously, it's out of his control, but he's a very, very good curator, and he's had a couple of years to sink his teeth into the MCG now. But I could imagine he'd be a little bit nervous just having, no one getting on the MCG and testing out his pitches this year.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. It's a concern for me because I like to give them every opportunity to trial the pitches. But we had a test event the other day, and we were meant to have Cricket Victoria was supporting us with players and 2-day game, and we had the pitch actually ready to go, and the game got cancelled the night before, and that was really ultimately a result of the situation in South Australia. So I think it demonstrates how vulnerable we still are, you know, day by day. But yes, I think you're right. Ideally, we'd love to have a game, and we're still working on that. But ultimately, it may not happen. But Matt's in a good spot. He produced a really good pitch last year that got a really good rating. And he knows his trade. So I would have thought he's year three in, and he's starting to deeply understand our pitches compared to where he was.
Foxy, be a lot of MCC members listening. How are you going to work with them? I think I heard something about they can't go every day, maybe one day or 2 days. What's your theory if you get the 25?
We've put a communication out to members, but it is likely to change. What we've done is work with Cricket Australia pretty closely to make sure it's a fair allocation of tickets. So, you know, look, the members reserve at the moment, if it was 25,000 tickets day one, we'd end up with 5,700 tickets. So that we'd have to ballot them. So you'd ballot each day, but if tickets do increase, that may change. So I'll hold the procedures for today, but it's going to be challenging to get a ticket, and I would have thought Victorians are going to be chomping at the bit to get back and enjoy the summer and cricket. So high demand, there'll be a lot of phone calls, there'll be a lot of requests, but I think we'll come up with a system where we just want to try and obviously service the public, corporates and our members as fairly as we can.
Foxy, you're right. There'll be a lot of people waiting and chanting at the bit to get out
here,
there.
Wouldn't there?
Is there anything out of the box that we can expect walking in through the gates at the MCG, COVID protocols, or is it just in line with whatever else is out there in the hospitality arena and all other businesses?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there will be some differences that we'll see. And we are the first major event coming back with, you know, significant crowds. So it's a bit of a challenge for us because it's going to be new. But just the ticketing is probably the fundamental difference. You know, we will require everyone to social distance, and you know, people can still sit in groups and families, but we're going to rely on a lot of common sense. And that's why we did the trial event the other day, just to see how 300 people would behave when they were given a ticket, but not an actual seat. They were given a bay and a row, and we just wanted to see how they behaved. It worked really well, and it's worked well throughout Australia. But look, just small things. I think cricket's ideal for a return because, as you all know, it's such a casual, you know, it goes all day. People are social. So they don't, it's not like AFL where the siren goes and you bolt to the toilets and go and grab your pie. It's just much more casual across a long period of time. So I think common sense will prevail, and I think we'll have a very good test.
Man that the guy I spoke to a couple of weeks ago, and then I was actually watching his final Sheffield Shield innings, and I was heartbroken. I wonder if he was when he went out for 97. Callum Ferguson, who will definitely have his Big Bash hat on now, joins us on the line. Callum, good morning. Welcome back to RSN.
Thanks for having me, guys. Always a pleasure. I can't believe the Dukes dodged me, though. I'm a bit
busy
on that.
Oh, he ran. You should have seen him. Oh, I've got to go suddenly.
The sun's out, the guns are out for Duke, and he was off onto the million-dollar rowing machine he's got down there in Mornington. So he was very quickly out of here. One question I wanted to ask you, I mentioned off the top, 97 in the final innings. Now, I know Half and Whitey spoke to you before that final innings, but when you went out, what was the overwhelming emotion? Because I had the split screen going at home with about three cricket games on at once watching the Shield, but you were the main one, and I was devastated. How did you feel?
Oh, look, first of all, when I walked out there, I just wanted to get off the mark. Just get off the mark in your last hit. But it was quite an emotional roller coaster the entire week. But when I walked out for my last innings, Usman and the Queensland guys actually gave me a guard of honour on the way out there, which they didn't have to do. But that was, really, really nice touch from them. But I was pretty nervous. If I'm honest, but a lot more nervous when I walked out there than I was on 97, actually. So I kind of went from mid-80s to 97 quite quickly and then walked off almost as quickly after I had my front pad blown off down to fine legs. So, it was disappointing, obviously, and not just necessarily because I didn't get to the three figures, but I was probably just pleased that I'd managed to put a decent score on the board and help the guys get through most of the last day. But we were starting to get on top and get into a position where we looked like we were a chance to win if we batted well in the next half an hour. And now, unfortunately, that didn't happen. So I was a bit dirty for a number of reasons as I walked off. But then I reckon when I got close to the boundary, it was almost like a sense of relief. You know, that was it. And I was, you know, I got a nice applause on the way off. And the Queenslanders were really good again as I walked off. But yeah, it was almost a sense of relief. That was it for the last time, and it was over to someone else.
So it wasn't going to hit any pegs by the sound of that, Ferg?
No, that wasn't what I was saying. I thought it was probably hitting the outside leg, so it was a tight call, but I thought it was probably hitting on replay. But I was just a bit, you know, mind you, the umpire didn't read the script, did he?
No, come on. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, seriously. What are we dealing with? But,
it's a tight call. You got to be, you know, the situation up. Keep the finger down.
That's exactly what I thought initially. You know, come on, mate, seriously. But it was a bit of a relief, I reckon. Once I started getting close to the boundary, that was it. And now someone else's turn to try and get us the next Shield.
Now we find you in Coffs Harbour, don't we? You were evacuated.
Yeah, exactly. Of all places, I didn't see this coming in the next month leading into the Big Bash. But we've got up here, the sun's out, nice mild sort of mid to late 20s. Not a bad place to spend 10 days of quarantine. So not where I planned on being. I actually planned on being with probably seven of the other Redbacks down at Lynx Lady Bay at Diz's joint down there. We've got a nice golf course down there, which we all like, and we were going to do 3 days of golf down there. We got 10 holes in. I think I had a lot of a lot of golf competitions, beers, all that lined up for a week off with Travis Head. He'd teed up with our West End sponsors, just a little plug for them there, to have a bit truck down there for us. And unfortunately, 10 holes in, we were sent back to Adelaide, and on a plane 24 hours later, it all went pear-shaped really quickly.
John Millman, he's currently quarantining in Sydney. And I want to find out what he's up to in that hotel room for the next couple of weeks. He joins us on the show now, an ATP Tour winner. John Millman, how does that sound?
Oh, it sounds pretty good, boys. It was a culmination of a pretty tough year, and really happy to lift the title.
In all years for strange things to happen, it's been a long time coming. You have really peaked later on in your career after overcoming so much in terms of injury and fitness, and it's so good to see you back. Describe the relief, the feeling after finally getting your name on a trophy at the elite level.
Yeah, look, it's a tough thing. The ATP titles have been tough to come by for anyone, and I've been in two finals before that. Came up against some pretty stiff opposition in one of them. I think I played against Novak. So they're not that easy to win. And I was a little bit apprehensive early doors to get over on the plane to Kazakhstan. I wasn't totally sure what to expect, but what a place. No Borat in sight, and they looked after me incredibly well. And I was just so happy. And like you touched on, I was very relieved to lift the title, because it's something that, at least until, I'm hoping I've still got a few more years left swinging the rackets, but it was definitely something I wanted to check off before I stopped playing tennis.
And there were some really good players that you beat as well, Francis Tiafoe, Fernando Verdasco and Manarino in the final. What was it like over there? Tell us a bit about the stands, the arena that you played in, the setup of the tournament, what Kazakhstan is like. Describe what the feeling was.
Yeah, look, it's different. Tennis is different in general these days, though. For the last 4 months, I've been playing in bubble quarantine conditions. So literally, you can only go from the hotel to the courts, back to the hotel. You can't get outside the hotel, or you can't go outside the court vicinity. So tennis is a little bit different, and I just have to commend the great job the Kazakhstan Tennis Federation did in hosting that tournament. You know, it was a pop-up event. They only had about 6 to 8 weeks' notice because another event had to cancel due to the COVID situation, and they had such a small amount of time to do it. But the president of the Kazakhstan Tennis Federation, he's a multi-billionaire, and he loves his tennis, and that helps. He owns the Ritz-Carlton down the road, so we had pretty good lodging, and overall, it was a phenomenal experience because they did such a good job, And I got the title, and it's easy to say that you enjoy the place when you lift the title, but they did do an incredible job, and hopefully it becomes a permanent fixture on the ATP Tour calendar, because they deserve it. They should get that reward after hosting such a good tournament.
You said you've been operating these bubbles, John, but the reports out of Melbourne down here that the Victorian government isn't playing ball with what would be the Australian Open bubble, which would have you guys in a hotel but able to practice while you're quarantining at Melbourne Park.
Yeah, look, it's a really tricky situation, and I can understand the apprehension that the Victorian government has, because Australia's done such a good job in tackling the COVID situation, but very confident that Tennis Australia and the Australian Open team could create a safe environment, not just for the players, but the people of Victoria. It's a really tricky situation right now. I don't think players would come if they have to stay inside a hotel like I am right now and then go out and compete. It's just not safe for them to do so. And, the Victorian government looks like they really have to play ball for the tournament to go ahead. And I know that Craig Tiley and the team are working relentlessly to try to make it happen. But from a player's point of view, there's obviously a little bit of anxiety from the playing community, because obviously we want to get to Australia. We love playing the Australian Open, but decisions probably have to be made pretty soon for the event to go ahead, in my opinion.
So do you think if they were forced to endure the quarantine that you're currently going through, that would stop a number, if not perhaps even a majority of players coming to Melbourne for the Australian Open?
Yeah, look, the idea to begin with was to have it like we have had over the last 4 months at every tournament, which is where you can do your hotel quarantine. You're in a bubble, but you also have access to tennis courts. So you get carted around in buses to the tennis courts where you are also in a bubble. There's no members of the public allowed there. And then you can come back and stay in your room and wait until the next day until your quarantine period's over. And I just don't think that players would be able to just be confined to a hotel room. It's actually not so good for your body. I don't know too many professional athletes that would do it in any sport.
The Breakfast Club, 6 till 8:30 weekdays on RSN 927.